You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Thursday, 17 June. I'm Keith McLaughlin from Integral Asset Management. I'm standing in for Simon. He's off holidaying and having fun. We're coming at you live and loud, and to be honest, a little bit nervous, from MoneyWeb Studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we have Sean Ashton on the Fed, inflation, and we want to touch on big tech and global markets if we have time. Paul Aronson, CEO of Stenprop, and their results, the multi-let industrial space and what it is. If we have time, also touching on the UK and how they're trading. Then finally, we have David Kahn, the CEO of Mustek, exploring the global microchip shortage. In terms of global markets, gold is sitting at 1825, down a little bit. The U.S. 10-year yield has firmed a bit to 1.569%. USD to the ZAR, at least, has weakened on the back of the Fed Fed announcement. Briefly popped over 14 to the dollar, but currently trading at 13.99. S&P and NASDAQ both down slightly. Asia looking mostly green, with Oz a little bit off. Reason being is that most of commodities have weakened into a stronger dollar. In terms of news headlines, SA Asset Managers welcome the government's energy and aviation reforms on MoneyWeb. As an SA Asset Manager, manager myself, I have to agree. SA moves to level 3 lockdown, announced on Tuesday evening, just ahead of yesterday's public holiday, on news24.com. And investors obsessed with US inflation clues on business day. We are going to be chatting further about that.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
First up, we have Sean Ashton from Prime Asset Managers, runs the Sierra Global Fund. Good morning, Sean. I'm glad you could join us. The Fed obviously announced overnight that rates remains unchanged in the U.S. There's no surprise. I suppose really a key element was we were looking for guidance as going forward. When does the tightening start? And as they talk about the dot plots have shifted around. What was your take from the meeting last night?
Yeah, so I think it's reasonable to assume that this was the first real hawkish message from the Federal Reserve Committee and from Powell himself, although he did try to hedge his bets a little bit into the press conference. But I think when looking at the so-called dot plot, which effectively plots the number of members calling for certain rate hikes at certain points in time, that's now looking at 13 out of 18 officials seeing at least one hike by the end of 2023, and 11 are actually looking for two hikes. So that's a material increase in the number of members looking for a hike in 2023, and obviously the first time that we've seen a median of at least two by the end of 2023. It's obviously still quite a long way away, but I think what's happened is the language has drifted out somewhat in terms of completely dismissing inflation. Yes, they did say that inflation is driven by transitory factors, but in the press conference, Powell did note that that they're unsure of the pace at which the transitory pressures will abate, but they do expect that increases in supply in those sectors will ultimately force inflation down. So I think it's a bit of a softening of the previous language, and there was talk about a very strong job market expected over the next 1 to 2 years. They're not quite there yet. Obviously, unemployment remains above 6% in the U.S. versus 3.5% pre-pandemic. But I think certainly the language is drifting towards a more hawkish stance.
And in terms of the language drifting to more hawkish stance, it's obviously driven – well, key elements coming out of this are inflation expectations. And the Fed talks a very strong game in terms of transitionary inflation. But at the same time, if this gets embedded in payrolls, it can potentially become structural. I mean, where do you lie in terms of that raging debate?
Yeah, so I don't know is the honest truth. I think that they also hinted that they're not completely convinced, but But certainly, if you look at the last inflation print, which was about 5%, you know, roughly, and this would have reinforced the Fed's original stance of transitory inflation. You know, they, if you look at the last print, more than half of the month-on-month increase came from six or seven categories, which are largely deemed to be highly impacted by the reopening and associated lack of capacity to deliver. So that's used cars, rental cars, vehicle insurance, lodging, etc. So they're effectively saying they're still expecting inflation to come down to within the, or a little bit above 2%, I think. And that's more or less in line with where five-year break-evens are. They're at about 2.5 or 2.4%, which is what is implied by the Treasury inflation-protected bond yields over the next few years. So I think that the inflation expectations and the way that the Fed communicated it, the inflation expectations remain anchored, but are still at the level at which they want to be seeing it. In other words, they don't want to see deflation, and they obviously don't want to see a wage price spiral. But it's probably too early to adopt the stance that we're going to have a wage price spiral. I think there is merit in what they're saying around, you know, an element of transitory impact on inflation. And we've already seen some categories of the drivers of price inflation coming off quite materially. So lumber prices have come back quite substantially in the US. It's obviously one category. But, you know, that's actually, if you talk about base effects, you know, in a year's time, you could be measuring prices off a very elevated level for certain categories. And that would support the stance of, you know, the one comment which Fed Powell mentioned was that there's a possibility that on the other side of this inflation be quite low, actually, if you look forward a year from today. It doesn't feel like it right now, but that's how base effects work.
Well, let's hope the Fed is correct. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. I was hoping to touch on big tech, but that was Sean Ashton, Portfolio Manager at Prime Asset Managers, runs the Sierra Global Fund. Thank you for your early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
We now have David Cann, CEO of Mustech. We want to chat around microchip shortage that's happening globally. And just for the listeners' benefits, microchips don't just sit within your computers and mobile phones. They sit within your kettles and fridges and cars and everywhere. Anything that's electronic and is half intelligent and doing performing a function uses them. So a global microchip shortage is potentially a very devastating thing. Morning, David, and thanks for joining us. If we can just touch on big picture, why is there a global microchip shortage if these are such important inputs into so many different things that the modern world uses?
Well, look, I mean, I think that ultimately that, you know, the market prices are solely depend on supply and demand. And if you look at in the past 12 months, demand has shot up tremendously due to way of people live, that you know, you have a lot more people work from home, you have a lot more people learning from home, and so on and so forth. Never mind the new applications such as 5G, artificial intelligence, and so on and so forth. And those will add to the demand side. However, the demand can be increased, say 20-30% overnight, but the supply or the manufacturing capacity takes time to catch up. I mean, I can give you one of the easiest example. I mean, a few months ago, that a kilo of ginger price jumped to 300 rand. But last weekend, I went to Checkers. I think they went back to 60. You know, this is purely driven by supply and demand. And like I said, the demand can shoot up, the manufacturing capacity will take time to catch up.
So what is your sense in terms of how long it will take the manufacturing, the supply side of this equation to catch up with this ramping, or let's call it elevated demand? I mean, are we talking months? Is it going to rebalance later this year, or is this much further out, 3 to 5 years out?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I don't think that the manufacturing capacity can be reacted so efficiently. For example, I'm sure that you heard the news that Intel is going to build new two fab in Arizona. And the whole market thinks that, you know, this shortage is going to end very soon. But in fact, that when you break the ground of making a new fab, till you can get to a mass production with the correct yield rate, you're talking about 2 years, 2.5 years. So we don't see that the shortages of microchip will get eased off this year, never mind next year. I think it's going to last until 2023.
Zooming in a little closer to home, obviously being CEO of Mustech, you deal predominantly in the hardware side of this equation. As a domestic distributor, you'll have a supply chain that reaches all the way back into this. A lot of the products you move have microchips in them. How are you finding this affecting your supply chain personally, and how are you managing to trade through this period?
Well, look, okay, obviously that, you know, all the prices have shoot up, due to the supply constraint. Most of the product are in allocations. Say, for example, you want to order 100 units, they can only manage to give you 70, some lower. So you just have to, you know, maybe multiple source. This guy can give you 30%, that guy can give you 40%, you know, and so on and so forth, and try to get to the number that you want. But, okay, there's one thing that is going to magnify or make the shortage even worse. But say, for example, that your manufacturing capacity at the moment is only 10% lower than the total demand. But buyers like ourselves, like any other buyers in the world, we will do double or even triple booking. They will make the supply gap even bigger. And that which is going to push the price harder. So in the short term, I think those double booking, triple booking is certainly dominated again. The market has to cool down, and I think that should take place, I would say, in the maybe six months. But to get to a supply demand balance, my forecast is 2023.
That's quite a while to wait, and that is a fair point. I mean, this is well publicized that there is a shortage. So stockpiling is definitely some of this ramp up demand, and stockpiling itself is not permanent demand. It's actually temporary. So, thank you very much. That was David Kan, CEO of Mustech. Thank you very much for your early morning.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the money. Also available on podcast.
Now we have on the line Paul Aronson, CEO of Stenprop. Stenprop, as a UK REIT, is actually listed on the JSE, and they play in the multi-let industrial space. What is that? Well, we're going to touch on that right now as we chat through their latest set of results. Good morning, Paul. Glad you can join us.
Morning.
First of all, I mean, if we touch on your results, like-for-like portfolio increase of 6.3%, predominantly driven by rental growth. So it's good quality in terms of growth. Like-for-like rental growth, specifically across the multi-let industrial space, of 5.6% as vacancies have fallen. I mean, dividend remained flat over this period, but I assume that's an element of conservatism given the current uncertainty in the world. And the balance sheet's relatively ungeared. You must be quite comfortable with these results. Can we perhaps zoom into what multi-let industrial is and why you're focusing on this in the UK?
Thanks, Keith. Multi-let are these, it's part of the industrial asset class. So industrial asset class, you have big box, you have mid-size box, and then you have the smaller end, which is where people do last mile distribution, packing, stocking, just basic sort of processes. So it's sort of all small and medium-sized businesses who are also participating in the e-commerce revolution at the smaller end. So we're at that end. Average size is about 350 square meters. It's really not too high, just a sort of basic shed, really, where they can do their work with a 5 or 10% office content, a little kitchen, and just dry covered working space, really, just very practical. And all these little businesses in the UK are benefiting from e-commerce. They can all set up, they can access suppliers, they can access customers, they can access all kinds of distribution. And there's just been a huge explosion of demand of the type of occupiers who want to occupy that space. It used to be people who made things sort of more real industrial, but now it's sort of been gentrified into all sorts of e-commerce type operators or businesses that are enabled by e-commerce. And the coronavirus has really accelerated that trend. So lots of retailers couldn't open and they just opened in sheds and operated through websites. So that's, we've seen a proliferation of demand.
Is this one of the reasons why you're getting such strong above inflation rental growth? Is there's just a short supply of this sort of property in the market? And surely that means in the longer term that more of it is going to be built, so it'll self-correct, surely?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, that's what we particularly like about the multi-let space is these units need to be located in and around densely populated areas. They're not located on highways because there's a lot of work and activity. So employees need to get to them, customers need to get to them. And so they're all located in and around densely populated areas. And they compete for space with residential, and there's a huge shortage of residential in the UK. So really there is no land available to build new ones. And also we're buying them at roughly 60 to 70% now. We started off at 50% of replacement cost, build costs. So our average cost is about 80, average sort of capital value is about £80 per square foot, whereas if someone had to build one, they probably couldn't build it for less than £120 per square foot. So we don't see any new building of these for many years to come until rents have gone up approximately 50%. So there's a real shortage of them and no likelihood of any of them coming on stream until rents go up significantly. Rents are just too low at the moment to justify development.
That makes a lot of sense. So the demand-supply gap will be breached by price, which is effectively the rental side. But at the same time, if you see this and the market sees this, who's selling these properties so cheaply and why aren't they hiking their rents and selling the property at 100% of replacement cost? Or do you perhaps have a platform where you can extract that where, in fact, the previous owners couldn't?
Yeah, we've got a strong platform. I mean, one of the barriers to buying these type of units is they're very management intensive. So an average multi-let industrial estate will have sort of 20 or 30 occupiers, anywhere between 10 and 50. And it's not as easy to manage as having one big single-let shed where you've got a strong tenant on a long lease and you're just collecting the rent, you know, quarterly. Here, one way or another, we're renewing or re-letting 25% of all our leases every year. So in this last financial year, we have over 1,000 tenants at the moment, and we renewed or re-let 250 of them this year. So you've really got to have a very slick, efficient platform to do that, and that sort of costs money. And this is a very fragmented market. So most people who own multi-let estates, you know, maybe they own one, and so it's very difficult for them to manage it, you know, for them to set up a whole digital marketing platform when they only own one estate is just impossible.
So there's a degree of return to scale, yeah, where you can build a quality platform.
Absolutely, yeah.
So after the results, you have had a month or two of trading in the new financial year. How are you finding the UK conditions given all the uncertainty?
Sorry, I lost you there. How are we finding?
How are you finding the UK economy subsequent to results year end?
Interestingly enough, the economy now is really bouncing back. You know, it's largely opened up, and you know, there's a big catch up going on. So we're actually finding it even more buoyant than it was, quite a lot more buoyant than it was during the sort of lockdown periods of the last year.
That's a very positive message, and it will be quite exciting to watch this multi-let industrial asset class and how you guys extract value from it. That was Paul Aronson, CEO of Stenprop. Thank you very much for your particularly early morning out of the UK. That's it for today. We, and by we, I mean Simon, is live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and app at 6:30 a.m. and podcasts available from just after 7 a.m. Massive thanks to Simon's team, Eddie, Caldoro, Nicole, and to all of you listening and my guests and their early mornings and contributions. My name is Keith McLaughlin from Integral Asset Management. And tomorrow we have Chantal Marks, who will be also be having a particularly early morning.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.